on the shores of Wapagasset, with its lovely lapping waters, meet the sky of azure blue. There the whippoorwills are singing, the forests all are ringing, there's a smell of campfires too. Campacaguan, hey, Campacaguan, hey, Campacaguan, we love you.
Well, that is the song that inspired this whole episode of Listeners' Voices. And I'm happy to say I have my co-host here in the form of Jane Timke. Welcome, Jane.
Hello. And Richmond, I went to Lake Camp Wapagasset myself. So that really was fun to hear.
Wapagasset, Ikagowan, Wanakiwan, Tanaduna. All these names are going to come up in this episode. So, right, he was explaining where he got the ethic of picking up yuckety-yuck stuff from all over, wherever he travels by trail or car, and learned that value of leaving no trace from his camp Ikagowan. And as soon as I heard him sing that song, I thought that would be a great prompt. So here we are, Listeners' Voices. We take responses to our biweekly prompts, and either written or recorded, and people may share those at ktwhwriters@gmail.com. And we welcome responses to previous prompts. So if you're just hearing this for the first time today and you have a summer camp story to share, we welcome it anytime. And recorded submissions can be made with a voice memo app on a smartphone, or you can bring written ones here to the station, send them to the email, mail them to us at 622 P.O. Box 622 here in Two Harbors, 55616. So, and we do have both submissions to previous episodes. We're saving those now for the later part of the episode because people are tuning in to hear about summer camp. We're going to launch right into the summer camp part. But later in the episode, we do have some belated responses to a previous prompt and even one totally unprompted submission, which we also welcome. You can make up your own prompt as a one-time thing, and we will share that too. So this is June 7th will be the next episode of Writers' Voices. Writers' Voices. This is otherwise known as Listeners' Voices, but you can either write or talk, and we'll listen. This is a prompt that also has been suggested by other people, two prompts put together. So we'll give you an early heads up on the next one. We had had a prompt of First Kiss. And I thought, I wonder how many people are going to share those stories or remember them, or probably everybody remembers them. But then just this week we had another suggestion of love letters as a prompt. So I thought, well, we'll put those together. Maybe we'll get a few out of that combination. So first kiss and or love letters is the prompt for June 7th. And submissions are welcome all the way up through at least Thursday, June 5th. Depending on if it's a live episode or not, maybe even a little later. So before we launch into this, you had some summer camp experience of your own, Jane?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was thinking about my camp experience at YMCA camp, Camp Manitou, which is near New Auburn, Wisconsin. And I went there probably for 3 or 4 years between like grade 3 through 5 or 6. What I remember most about it was the trampoline. Now, we were just forbidden by my parents to ever go on a trampoline. They were absolutely terrified of we kids breaking our necks, which was probably kind of true.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, they weren't there, so we did it anyway. And I just remember looking back at it. You know, you had all these like little kids around the trampoline, no net, and they're all spotting. So it really was pretty fraught. But, oh, my God, it was so thrilling. The other thing I really enjoyed was ping pong. And I had an advantage there because we had a ping pong table in our basement, and our dad, I had three sisters, and my dad taught us how to play ping pong. And the thing was, he had learned ping pong in the service. When he got out of the service, they had lost all the papers for the discharge papers for his company or whatever you call it. And so he was stuck in Kansas at an Army or an Air Force camp. And it was all they did was do recreation. And I got the story from him. And he said, I said, Dad, that's really weird. And like I was working with records and archives at the time. And I thought, how could this even happen? He says, well, I don't know. I don't know, but it happened. You know,
they had to stay there because they couldn't find the paperwork.
They couldn't discharge this group of people. Okay. So my question was, okay, Dad, what are we talking about here? Like a couple days, a week or so? Oh, no, a couple of months. I'm going, what? And so yeah, they just, like, hang out, apparently. And ping pong was one of the things. And they had to show up every day for roll call and whatever. So as kids, we played a lot of ping pong in the basement. So at Camp Manitou, they would have a ping pong tournament at the end of the week. And my claim to fame is that I came in first place.
And
in the championship. One other thing, we're going to hear more of this today, is I just remember all the silly songs. And I was racking my brain to contribute a few to this program and couldn't think of very many, but I just thought of one now. It was called John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith.
Oh, yes.
John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith, that's my name too. And whenever we go out, the people always shout, there goes John Jacob Jingleheimer. John, that's enough.
Okay, yeah. I was going to play that, but I think we don't have to now.
Oh, my goodness. You can play it again. It'll sound a lot better than that.
It is a true earworm. I couldn't get it out of my head for days after I did play it as part of that last episode. But anyway.
Oh, my gosh. That's it for me.
That's it.
Unless, you know.
We can share it some more later.
We can share
maybe,
later,
if you have,
yes. Yeah. You've got some really good contributions today.
So we're going to first have people's personal memories, like Jane has just been sharing, of their personal camps, and then a couple interesting stories, one about Camp House, the actual camp house that Camp House Road is named for, and that the fire that is 90% contained now up in Brimson was named for. A little bit of history of Camp House, and then another interesting segment about radio stations at and for summer camps. But first, let's hear more about Richmond's experience at Camp Ikagawan.
This is Richmond responding to the listener's voices prompt. Summer camp memories. 8 years old, I think I was. It was winter. Mother somehow came up with the idea that my going to summer camp might be good for me. She must have generated some enthusiasm on my part, because the next thing I recall was I was going door to door selling Pearson Thin Mints so that we may get enough funds for me to go to YMCA, Camp Ikagawan, on Lake Wapagasset, Amory, Wisconsin. The feelings were mixed going door to door, asking folks to buy these delicious mints. It was thrilling when I would get someone to buy a box, and even more exciting when someone bought several boxes. But other times it would be many, many a no, and many, many a block walked before that next purchase. So over the winter and into spring, my mother would drive me through the neighborhoods of Columbia Heights, Minnesota, with me hawking these delicious minty treasures, with each purchase bringing me closer to my very first away-from-home 7-day summer camp adventure. Early in June, there I was on a bright orange school bus packed with other boys my age, heading to Camp Ikagawan, singing songs. I've got sixpence, jolly, jolly sixpence, 99 bottles of beer on the wall, 99 bottles of beer. Being at camp, it was kind of scary for me at first. I was younger than some of the other boys there, and them sensing my vulnerability started in with taunting and teasing, until one, who was in my cabin, and my bunkmate, intervened. letting those messing with me know that if you messed with Rick, that's why what I went by back then, not Richmond, you messed with Rick, you were going to have to deal with Tommy. Tommy, he was taller than me and maybe a year older, which would have made him 9 or 10. Tommy was my guardian angel and first camp friend, and my very first meeting and friendship with someone of color. He was black. White and black, Caucasian, African American. These were words not in use much or familiar to me at the time. All I knew was we were friends and Tommy had my back. The teasing and taunting stopped. What did we do at Camp Ikakwa in that first year? I learned campfire building, how to split wood with an axe, how to tie knots and the difference between a granny knot and a square knot, swimming lessons, fishing, how to leave the campsite in better condition than we'd found it, how to row a boat, do archery, play soccer, a brand new sport never heard of, and singing lots of singing, kumbaya. There's a hole in the bucket, dear Georgie, dear Georgie. So many songs, camping, my first ever camping experience, pitching a big old canvas tent and sleeping in the rain. Drip, 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 drip. As every day of this 7-day outdoor nature skills immersion adventure rolled by, anxiety turned to curiosity and then to joy. By the end of those 7 days, getting back onto that big old bus, I felt a great sadness as we left the experience of Camp Ikakwin behind, bringing with us only memories and the songs we'd learned. This was camp year one. Over the next 3 years, every winter, I'd start my door-to-door sales of those same Pearson mints, with every purchase bringing me one step closer to my next Camp Ikakwin summer. 4 years as a camper and then eventually going back as an assistant camp counselor, and then the year following that, off to Camp Manojin on the Boundary Waters. 6 years total of YMCA summer camp experience changed my life. All those years, what did I learn? Rowing, canoeing, sailing, water safety, swimming, and senior life-saving, being a steward of the land, trampling, archery, marksmanship, soccer, building a one-match fire, birch bark burns when wet, working together with others, learning to play guitar, folk music, and lots of singing songs. This one was probably my most treasured song that I've brought with me on many a paddle, the Voyager song. Our paddles keen and bright, flashing like silver, swift as the wild goose flies, dip, dip, and swing. Dip, dip, and swing and back, flashing like silver, swift as the wild goose flies, dip, dip, and swing. Dip, dip, and swing.
Land of the silver birch, home of the beaver, where still the mighty moon wanders at will. Blue lake and rocky shore, I will return once more. Boom diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom. I on a rocky ledge, I'll build my wigwam close to the water's edge, silent and still. Blue lake and rocky shore, I will return once more. Swing diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom diddy yada, swing. My heart grows sick for thee here in the lowlands. I will return to thee, hills of the north. Blue lake and rocky shore, I will return once more. Swing diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom.
So I know and love that song well, and I think anybody who ever went to camp in northern Minnesota knows it. I know a lot of people who do, but then Peg didn't know it. You didn't know it?
Yes. I'm Jane, and I didn't know it because I went to camp in Wisconsin. So we had other songs.
And it's known by various names. I hadn't thought of it as a Voyager song, but Land of the Silver Birch, I think that might be what I Googled. Oh, no, My Paddle's Clean and Bright. I forget what I Googled in YouTube to find it, but there's another name for it. That's it. Land of the Silver Birch also. That's a little bit highly produced version there, but I liked the loon songs at the end there and blended so well with Richmond's version. So thank you, Richmond. That sounds like kind of the classic summer camp experience that he had there at Ikagawan. let's hear about Judy's camp experience.
Okay, this is Judy Sawson. I have wonderful memories of summer camp. Although neither of my parents were outdoorsy, they thought it was important that my sisters and I experience camp. I loved it and never wanted to leave, while my sister Mary Jo was ready to go home after the first day. I attended my first camp, Loxley, during the summer after fourth grade. This was a camp for Brownie Scouts. I remember the counselors telling us before we went to bed that if we heard anything during the night that sounded like someone screaming, we shouldn't be scared or alarmed. It was just the loons on a nearby lake. I did hear them, my first experience of those loony birds. The next two summers, I went to Greenwood, another Girl Scout camp. There I learned to canoe. My last two grade school years, I went to Camp Glengarda, a Catholic camp run by the Ursuline Sisters at Villa Maria Academy near Frontenac, Minnesota. I don't remember much about those summers, but I think I was able to stay for 2 weeks the last time. I remember many of the camp songs sung around evening campfires and after meals in the dining room, the morning and evening flag ceremonies, craft and swimming times. They were a sound foundation and focus for my attraction to the natural world and future camping experiences. The culmination of organized camping was being a part of the kitchen staff at a Girl Scout camp near Iron River, Wisconsin, the summer of 1986. How wonderful to be at camp all summer! I am so grateful for my parents for providing me with those opportunities to grow in my love and appreciation of the world of nature.
Thank you, Judy. Yeah, those experiences were so important in shaping people's sensibilities, I think, just as Richmond said. So I asked Judy what camp songs she remembered, because there are just some completely iconic ones, like the one we just heard from Richmond for Minnesota camps anyway. I wasn't familiar with this one, but it's called The Far Northland, Judy mentioned, and we'll hear that now.
It's the far northland that's a-calling me away, as take I with my pack sack to the road. It's the call on me of the forest in the north, as step I with the sunlight for my load. It's the flash of paddle blades a-gleaming in the sun, of canoes so softly skimming by the shore. It's the tang of pine and bracken coming on the breeze that calls me to the waterways once more. By Lake Duncan and clear water to Beskid I will go, where you see the loon and hear her plaintive wail. If you're thinking in your inner heart this swagger in my step, you've never been along the border trail. It's the far northland that's a-calling me away, as take I with my pack sack to the road.
Yeah, that sounds like another classic.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, beautiful. We'll share at least one more of Judy's camp songs that she remembers a little bit later. But first we'll hear about Bill's experience, which has a very natural follow-up that I'll share with
you. Yes, this is really something. Back in 1952, between 5th and 6th grades, I was selected to be captain of our Hiawatha School Patrol in South Minneapolis. School Patrol still exists to this day as little kids obediently hold red stop flags so their colleagues can safely cross streets. Being elected also had special honors, like being the only kid at school who could ride a bike to school and wear a police belt with a real Minneapolis police badge. But there was a catch. I had to attend school patrol training camp at Legionville near Brainerd. This was my first time away from home, and I would be with hundreds of kids I did not know. So Mom and Dad dropped me off, and I climbed on a giant bus with other kids. I sat in the back of the bus, and in those days, diesel buses sucked in lots of fumes into the back of the bus. I got really bus sick, and we got there. I immediately went behind the barracks I was assigned to and cried and vomited my guts out, even on my new clean clothes. Come dark, staff realized I was missing and found me still in back of my assigned barracks. The very next day, I mailed my folks to come and get me. I sent more cards the next few days telling them to get me. And I would wait for them at the gate at a certain time. But no one came. Over time, I became less sissified and became part of the bunch. But on my way home, I did not sit in the back of that diesel bus.
Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner? He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors hate the waiters, and the lake has alligators. And the head coach wants no sissies, so he reads to us from something called Ulysses. Now I don't want this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy? They're about to organize a searching party. Take me home, oh mother father, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home, I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay. I've been here one whole day. Dearest father, darling mother, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball. Gee, that's better. Mata fada, kindly disregard this letter.
So
that was
a perfect follow-up to Bill's,
experience.
Real-life
yes.
Camp Granada experience. I played that song last episode, but I could not not play it after.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. To remind me, who is it again? Who's singing it?
Alan Sherman.
Oh, yeah, Alan Sherman. I was just thinking about the days of laugh tracks in the background.
Oh,
dude, that's pretty fun.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a real-life
Oh, yeah, that could have been a live performance.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I kind of think so.
Yeah, well, that really summed up what both Judy and Bill's stories were about. But
yeah, especially
Bill's
Bill being so alienated, waiting at the gate for his parents to pick him up, and they didn't. And I could, well, his first feeling getting dropped off there, it was from with the bus, which was that horrible experience on the bus. But I'm going to read about some of my camp experiences, but I didn't include this. My camp counselor experience, which came last, I guess, probably in this lineup. My mother had driven me up. I had gone up for the interview. I knew the camp and so forth, but never been a counselor or anything like that before. And I remember having that kind of sinking feeling as she pulled away from the camp when she dropped me off with the actual gig, you know. And I was in college, but I didn't have my own car, so she drove me up from the cities. And I really had wondered what I'd gotten myself into with definitely a sinking feeling as she dropped me off. But I'll start at the beginning here. So I was blessed with experiences at many summer camps, largely thanks to my aunt and uncle in Oregon. But my first experiences were at Camp Tanaduna, a campfire girl camp in Minnetonka, probably, I think it was, four girls from the Twin Cities area. I remember the cabins were named after constellations, and I stayed in Draco. Astronomy was a big deal for me in those days, although I don't know that I ever did identify the constellation Draco. I guess I was just enamored of staring at the starry sky. Anyway, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven at camp, out in the woods all day, sleeping in a cabin. Little did I know how much of a preview of my adult life it was. Then for two summers, after fifth and sixth grades, I was a guest of my aunt and uncle out in Tillamook, Oregon, and companion up to my cousin, just 1 year younger. I got to go with her to three of the four camps she went to every summer. It got better and better as the summer went on. First, we were in totally finished cabins with plumbing and electricity, boring, probably a swimming pool, and it might have been, I think it was probably a church camp. Then to a Tanaduna-style camp with tents on wooden platforms and maybe knee walls, but canvas walls and roof, and in a more undeveloped setting. I think that was a YWCA camp. And then last and best came the camp with only one building in the whole place, the mess hall, or maybe it was even just the kitchen. We slept in camping tents in a remote nook in the mountains, probably two to four kids at the most, in a tent. It was by a creek for water, and we did lots of hiking and even spent one night out on the ocean beach under a very starry, starry sky, the brightest I have ever seen before or since, even though I live now in a very dark sky area. Despite the mountains and ruggedness of that camp, perhaps my favorite was after ninth grade when I went to a Y camp near Grand Rapids, where we went on a mini canoe trip in the immediate area, portaging and all. Excellent preparation for going to the Boundary Waters eventually. The weird thing is the circumstances of how I finally went to the Boundary Waters 4 years later. Despite never having been there before, I was hired as a camp counselor at Camp Wanakiwin near Barnum to lead kids on trips there. Besides my inexperience, I am also definitely not the camp counselor program director type personality. I don't have a clue how to entertain anyone, least of all kids. But I was so anxious to get up to the actual wilderness, I was willing to try anything, and apparently they were desperate enough to hire me. I found out at the interview I was hired, and I was so thrilled about getting the job, I got a speeding ticket on the way back to the cities, which cost me almost all of my summer's pay. After four sessions of teaching clueless girls how to canoe, and then the rigors of portaging and camping with them, I finally got some slightly older kids, late junior high age, who were experienced. I was ecstatic at having a real trip with girls who knew what they were doing. Maybe we could actually penetrate a little farther into the Boundary Waters, maybe even to the Quetico. But since they were experienced, it would be no big deal for them. And despite having grown up in Duluth, they had never actually been up the North Shore. So we ended up taking a car camping trip to Gooseberry Falls State Park instead. Imagine my disappointment. It apparently expressed itself in my clumsiness when my leg slipped between some large boulders along the shore, and we took a trip, me driving ourselves with my bloody shin scraped down to the bone, to the emergency room in Two Harbors. A memorable trip, but not in the way I had anticipated. So I looked for any poetry related to summer camping, and I didn't really find any. I didn't have enough time to search. There probably is some out there. I did find one poem called The Camper. It was written in, I believe, 1917 by a woman. E. Pauline Johnson, and she was a Native American. And this camper's experience reminded me of the experience of sleeping out on the ocean beach under the stars, and so I want to share this with you next.
The Camper by E. Pauline Johnson, read for LibriVox.org by Newgate Novelist. Night 'neath the northern skies, lone, black, and grim, naught but the starlight lies 'twixt heaven and him. Of man no need has he, of God no prayer, he and his deity are brothers there. Above his bivouac the firs fling down through branches gaunt and black their needles brown. Afar some mountain streams, rock-bound and fleet, sing themselves through his dreams in cadence sweet. The pine trees whispering, the heron's cry, the plover's passing wing, his lullaby. And blinking overhead, the white stars keep watch o'er his hemlock bed, his sinless sleep. End of poem. This recording is in the public domain.
So, I also want to share one of the camp songs that I recall the best, along with another one we'll hear in a bit, but when I think camp songs, this is the one that most obviously comes to mind. I know there's several more out there, but some of you might remember this too.
White coral bells upon a slender stalk, lilies of the valley deck my garden walk. Oh, don't you wish that you could hear them ring? That will happen only when the fairies sing. White coral bells upon a slender stalk, white coral bells upon a slender stalk, white coral bells upon a slender stalk, white coral that leaves out the very dash that you could hear them walk. That would have you wish that you could hear them ring. That will happen only when the fairies sing.
Did you know that one, Jen?
Oh, certainly. You know, I was thinking one of my absolute favorite things about Camp Manitou were all the rounds we were singing,
right.
The music, I just loved it, usually right after lunch.
Yeah.
So thanks for finding that one.
Yeah, yep. Right, and I was thinking the same thing, rounds. I know there were other rounds that I'm not quite bringing to mind, but they were fun. And people, kids get the experience of singing harmony without knowing it, kind of.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful blending of voices. So I think any other camp songs you want to request before we move into the out of direct personal experiences at camp, but a couple other stories to
Well,
share
I'm not
here.
Going to sing this one because it's more challenging, but I still sing this when I'm hiking with friends, the one about I'd love to be a wanderer among the leaves so green, and it ends up with Valerie,
oh,
Valera, Valerie, Valera, Valerie. You get it. I imagine most of you have sung that one, but
yeah,
that's memorable.
A fun one. Yeah. Any other? Did you share everything you were going to share about camping? About your personal story?
Well, this is not about. Excuse me, just a minute. This is not about camps, going to camp, you know, specifically. Mm-hmm. This is more like a rather doomed camping trip.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to call it, So This Is Camping. So I had friends whom I'd met at Telmark Lodge in Cable, Wisconsin. And one of the things that I was doing is when I was in college was I was working on the dining room crew at Telmark. It was the first year they were open, first couple of years, and I met some very good friends. And we decided, we had a day off, a couple days, and Deb, Judy, Debbie, and I drove around. We decided we wanted to go camping in one of the National Forest campgrounds in the kind of the Cable through Mellon area down to Drummond. And this is before you could make reservations, so you really didn't know what you're going to get, what you're getting into in terms of whether there'd even be a space available. So we drove around from one campground to the next. We started at Lake Owen in Drummond. We were at Lake Nemecoggin, Twin Lakes, I think it was. And what we just had to remember, it was full. It was July. So finally, we ended up in Clam Lake, Wisconsin. And we were at the Day Lake Campground. Debbie and Judy, who were sisters, brought a four-person tent. It was sprinkling when we arrived, and we realized immediately that Judy had forgotten to pack the tent frame. She had the tent pegs, but that was not really going to be any use. And we were really quite a long distance from Cable. So what we did, we got really, really innovative. I look back on this. I don't know how we pulled this off. We tipped two picnic tables onto their sides and somehow managed to create this windbreak, which was getting kind of windy, too. And somehow we draped the tent over the tables and staked it into the ground. And I can't imagine how we did this because there was a floor in the tent. So maybe I'm a little off. But all I know is there were two picnic tables tipped on their sides that was involved in the structure. And so the drizzle continued, and it continued. We somehow lit a fire and then fixed a meal. We took a hike, and this was, Day Lake was a bog lake, so it was really, really interesting, and there was a trail around it. We got really wet. So we sat in the tent and played cards and a board game called Masterpiece. We did that right into the night. We really had no desire to go out and make a campfire, and it wouldn't have started anyway. We spent the night damp and restless and cracking jokes about our adventure. Now, this was before cell phones, obviously, so there was no checking on forecasts and temperature. Maybe it was better that way. Okay, this is more after more Masterpiece and grumbling. By the next morning, it was the same, only a heavier rain. I don't remember even if we ate breakfast. It was probably really easy, and we had it inside the tent. But we had no desire to leave the tent except for a visit to the outhouse. Now, this was meant to be a two-night trip. However, we decided to pack up. We threw all our stopping gear into the car trunk and got out of there. So this was Debbie Pearson's first experience camping. Her sister had been raving about how fun it would be. So all the way back in the car, we heard Debbie Pearson grumbling as we hit Highway M and headed back to Cable. So this is camping.
Wow, yeah, a rude introduction.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was more to come in the future years, as we know.
So that gives me an idea for another more generic camping prompt. Not, you know, we had people thinking about summer camp, but there would be a lot of stories like this,
sure,
of family camping
sure.
trips and adult camping trips that went awry and so forth. So, yeah, we'll put that one on the list, too.
Well, Fran, I was just thinking about your story about being a counselor and ending up with this leg in the hospital.
Right.
That's a pretty good story.
Yeah, and that was more of a typical camping kind of story than
really?
Even though it was as part of a
sure.
camp. But, So this will be interesting now. A few years ago, I think this was 5 or 6 years ago, Becky Norlin interviewed Bunny Thompson, who was well known in the area. She was, I believe, worked for Community Partners for a while. Anyway, she was really a history buff, a local history buff, wherever she ended up, wherever she found herself. And so she has looked into the history of Camp House. And since it's very much in our minds with the Camp House fire still burning but 90% contained now, I thought it would be interesting to hear this interview. It's just part of a much longer interview, but we will hear about 6 minutes here.
In the next portion of the interview, Bunny talks about Camp House and her project to record camp history. For those not familiar with Camp House, it is a youth camp located on George Lake in Brimson, Minnesota, north of Two Harbors. Many Two Harbors young people spent time at the camp starting in the 1920s. Well, let's talk a little about your current project. Another history project. Yeah, so tell us what you're up to now in researching history.
Okay. My family, my husband's family, his grandfather, to be exact, built a cabin on George Lake in 1923. And that's how I established a connection with George Lake, is marrying my husband, going to the cabin every year, and listening to the joy and frivolity that would go on through the summer at Camp House. And it's just because of this idea of collecting history wherever I go, I went and spoke with the director at Camp House, who is David Eliason, to find out if anybody had ever written any history on Camp House. And he said that they had not actually documented a lot of it, but there were bits and pieces at the camp that he had put together. And so I thought, oh, wouldn't this be fun? And I had spoken with Tom Broadbent at some point in time after the history plays about, if I did something with Camp House, would you be willing to write music? So it's like, okay, here we go again.
Well, that's wonderful to get him involved again.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so much fun. But we will see how this goes. Number one, I want to get the history put together. And then I think it would be just fun to develop some kind of play regarding the camp. But first, I've got to get history put together. And there is some documentation at the camp that shows tentatively when and how it got started up until the current day. So I do have that timeline that I can follow.
What was the most active era for campers at Camp House?
Well, I think it was probably when it began. In 1923, it began for the railroad employees.
Yes.
And so then they would have all of their children all summer long going to camp. And my mother-in-law and I had talked to her, of course, many years ago. She said she just remembers the camp just being full all the time. And so that was a very active time, and it was with the girls 1 week and the boys 1 week. And it wasn't co-educational for many, many years, from my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were up there in the 60s, up through, probably the mid-70s, the camp was just bustling all the time. There was so much activity. You know, on the grounds themselves, they had baseball, soccer, they had everything, archery, and then they had canoeing. Of course, at that time, they didn't have paddle boards and kayaks, but they were in the water all day long in different groups. There'd be a portion of the camp at any given time would go in, be part of the swim program, but not all the campers at one time, which I thought was very interesting.
Sounds like they had a really a good time for all those kids that got to go.
Oh yes, it was fun, and I've had the opportunity to speak with some people. There was an article in the North Shore Journal that I was requesting information, and I did have some response, And oh my goodness, what a joy. Just listening to some of these folks and what their experiences were at the camp. They had contests for who could make their bed the best. And Titus, you know, like an army camp.
Yes.
In making the beds. And then they would get awards for it. It was, and just the one lady, she said, oh, I remember I won the award. And she said, I just felt so proud. And little memories like that are so much fun to put together.
I know there are a lot of people around Two Harbors with memories of going to Camp House when they were kids, or remembering talking of their, hearing their grandparents or parents talking about going to Camp House.
And I found out that at the Railroad Museum in Duluth, that there are documents there that I can research for the beginning of the camp. And then you, of course, gave me information on what would be at the library.
Lots of photos in the Youngren collection that were taken at Camp House.
And then I will also research the Two Harbors Historical Society down by the tracks and see what they might have hiding away in the in the woodwork.
Yeah, so interesting. It didn't occur to Becky and me until too late in the week to try to contact Bunny and see any more follow-up on that project, but we will try to do that. And she, I believe, is a snowbird. She's away in the winter, but would be around, this, if not yet, I would think, this summer. And if any of you out there have your own memories of Camp House at any stage of its evolution, you could contact us here. We'd like to hear about it. We could maybe add it into whatever archive there is about Camp House and share your stories as follow-up on.
That's a great idea, Fran. Yeah. It'd be fun to hear if Bunny has done any more research. That's just a fascinating story.
Yeah, and I think I've heard two versions. She said it started in 1923, but there's also something about 1925, which would make this its 100th anniversary. So keep our ears open for that. And it would be really fun to share more stories about Camp House.
While I was listening, it occurred to me, I just whispered to Fram, you know, the fact that it was for the railway workers would be that it was a company camp. Mm-hmm. And that's got some parallels up here with labor union camps.
Right.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Yep. A real neat... Neat, convenient to have it right along the railroad line. They could ship the kids up by railroad.
Yeah.
And miraculously, the fire burned on the far side of Lake George, but not the campsite. So as far as I know, everything survived there, I'm sure, with a lot of effort by the firefighters to protect it. Well, that, I believe, brings to a conclusion our summer camp part of the show. And if we have time at the end, we will throw in another song or two. But I'm happy that someone has taken us up on the invitation to make up your own submission or send anything that you would like us to share. And assuming it's FCC compliant and respectful of all of our listeners, we would be happy to share it with you. It doesn't have to follow the prompt of this or any other previous week. And so we did get a poem from Barb and Barbara, and Jane will share this with us now.
My Parkinsonism. In my Parkinsonism, I live there in prison. I write letters to you, but the words are all scribbled. I drool and I dribble, can't walk straight or run. Slowly but surely, I'll get things done. I have yet to see the other symptoms that come over me. I have a health care team that I have all seen through thick and through thin. I'm a survivor, all in. Think of me when I'm gone. I stand tested and tall, but I gave it my all. There is a better home waiting that's just for the taken.
Thank you.
listening to Bela Fleck and the Fleck Tones playing Chopin's Mazurka in F sharp minor. And I want to thank you, Barbara, for sharing that poem with us. That it's just really inspiring to see you face up to your situation and be quite open about it. Thank you for sharing that. We also have some submissions from people responding to the previous prompt a couple of episodes ago about personal impacts of the ongoing federal changes in programming and funding. And we have time to share some of that with you now. And I was kind of moved by this email from a friend whom I know through my connections to Korea. She is a handmade paper artist and does many other things with paper arts. After handmaking, Korean has a very distinctive form of handmade paper, different from the Japanese, similar but different from Japanese-style handmade paper. And then she uses that handmade paper to make some beautiful things, including clothing and sculptures. You kind of twist the paper into long, thin strands and weave things with it. Anyway, she has been a great vector of Korean handmade paper culture to the United States and has created some studios, at least one studio out east. And I occasionally get updated on what she's up to. And her most recent email said, now the NEA would be the National Endowment for the Arts. She said, however expected, the NEA news has gutted me in a whole new way. As you can see from the image above, she had a picture of something she's done, I advise drawing a tree or any plant every day for a moment of repose in the midst of this tsunami. So that's just by way of advice, one way to deal with the chaos we are enduring. Really wise, drawing a tree or any plant every day for a moment of repose in the midst of this tsunami. And I hope I can find this. This is from Sherry, a reflection on the impact of the job cuts from the Forest Service to the Forest Service, of especially our Superior National Forest right here. Many people still do not realize the depth of change going on in the Forest Service and our forest, the Superior. Phrases like ongoing budget and staffing woes may sound like business as usual. Someone said, cutbacks have been a campaign promise for decades. The Forest Service, as an agency, and the employees cannot speak out to what is really happening. But we can point out the white elephant in the woods. These are not normal retirements or changes in staffing. People are being yanked back and forth, demoralized, forced to make life decisions with no warning within days, left with no idea of what is next by the so-called savings this administration claims. It is cruel and unusual punishment, by all means, to people who have dedicated their lives to service to people and the natural world that we all love. These are our neighbors, friends, and family, many in the prime of their work years. Not only do we lose them, but we lose also their knowledge and experience. And if one wonders what these changes will bring to our forests, the wildlife, waters, and vegetation, just remember the chaos of COVID as an example. It is a sad day for all of us. Well, I don't have any cheery music to follow that up with. I think maybe we will go back to a couple camp songs. I do have another couple of commentaries kind of along, pretty much along the same lines, one about the impact of, this is not a personal submission, but it's a reference to a website about the impact on our national parks that the cuts are having. So I won't read this whole piece to you, but kind of the same point. And also the impact of national parks on local economies is quite huge. And by cutting off so much of the staffing, but requiring that they remain open, it just looks like a setup for eventual privatization of the national parks. And that is very controversial and not to be taken lightly, especially for maintaining access to national parks to everyone. But let's go back to, this is one that I think every camper probably shared at some point. And I guess we'll turn the mics off so we won't bend your ear with us singing along with this one. I did share it last time, too, because it's just so summer campy, but we can't do a summer camp episode without including this.
Jingleheimer Schmidt, that's my name too. Whenever I go out, the people always shout, Sean Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, da 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 da. Sean Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, that's my name too. Whenever I go out, the people always shout, Sean Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, da 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 da. Sean Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, that's my name. Whenever I go out, the people always shout, John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. Da 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 da.
So I spared you. Well, I didn't actually find a recorded version this way anyway, but when we sang it at camp, we sang it several times over, but each time, like that time, getting a little bit quieter. Do you remember doing that,
Oh,
Jen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, until you could barely hear each other whispering.
That was a really snazzy version.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
And it is quite an earworm. It may stick with you for the whole week, as it did with me last time I shared it, so I apologize in advance. Well, before we close here, and we may have to cut this off a little at the end, this is another one of Judy Sawson's requests or memories of Camp Songs, Baby's Boat. But I'll just remind you the prompt for 2 weeks from now, June 7th, is First Kiss and or Love Letters. Both suggestions from listeners of prompts they'd like to hear. And so those of you who suggested these, we will be waiting to hear from you. So here is Baby's Boat as remembered. Well, I don't know. Hopefully it's as Judy remembers it.
Baby's boat's a silvery moon, sailing on the sky, sailing o'er a sea of sleep, while the stars go by. Sail, baby, sail out upon the sea. Back again to me. Baby's fishing for a dream, fishing near and far, his line's a silvery moonbeam, his bait's a shining star. Only don't forget to sail back again to me. Only don't forget to sail back again.